to kick and jibe and twist. If Bran were near, his colour grew even higher than ever. He must forever be after him. Swore his mother had lied, that he'd nothing to do with such a runt. Well, forever, Bran felt that he had been robbed, cruelly robbed. If there was not enough of Aegar to make two men, there was enough to make one man and a half, and that half, if God had but been fair, would have gone to swell his own slender shape, to lengthen that right leg an inch shorter than the other, to provide muscle, blood, some of the flamboyant, arresting colour of his twin. Look what Aegar robbed him of, one half of the flesh and bone that should have been his. His belief in God, for if there was a God, how could he have looked on, seen him robbed in the very womb? Later on, of all that made life worth living. And lastly of Ivy Dean. During the boy's childhood, there was no school nearer than Rye, and they walked to and fro each day, taking their dinners with them. Between leaving home in the morning and his mother's goodbye kiss, the last sight of her waving her hand, and the return during the late afternoon, there passed each day a long and complete, and at times most dreadful, life for Bran Yeld. He left home each morning a child, afraid, but refreshed by sleep. He returned each evening, old, old and grey-faced with misery. The walk to school was not so bad. The bigger boys, always as it seemed Aegar was one of the bigger boys, lurked along the side of the dykes, chasing the sheep, throwing stones at the water rats and moorhens, seeking for birds' eggs, for pig nuts, for watercress. The first hours at school were not so bad. There had been Ivy Dean walking by his side, and now she was there on the same bench. They went up and up together, while Aegar remained stationary, sullen, scowling. I'd darn well lick the kid if I'd a mind to such flimsy goody-goodying, he said. But he never did lick him, not in class anyhow. He took it out of him on the asphalt playground at the mid-morning break, behind some rick or hedge at the dinner hour. It was not only that he bullied Bran, he shamed him, forcing him to kiss his big toe as though he were the Pope, to eat food that he had spat upon, in front of Ivy Dean, too. Worse than that, on the way home he would twist his finger in the girl's lint-white hair, while she screamed to Bran to deliver her. Bran, who could do little more than scratch and kick at Aegar's shins, toppling sideways upon his one weak leg, weeping with rage and hatred and the heartbreaking weariness of the day, suffering for Ivy's little hurt far more than he suffered for his own great one. Yet always, always, Aegar had only to look round with a jerk of the thumb, and Ivy would follow him. Often Bran would creep out after tea, along the hollow twixt wind-driven mounds of shingle, find Ivy, and sit with his arm around her neck, comforting her too, crooning over her like a mother, while she laid her head upon his shoulder and sighed, I'm always happy with you, Bran. Oh, how I love you, Bran. Don't let Aegar come anigh me. Don't ye now. He's ugsome. And yet ye follow him. I dinna follow him 'cause I'm leaf, but 'cause I must. I'm feared of him, Bran yelled. Feared of him as my teeth are all feared a lemon. Yeah, go with him. It was hard for him to be hard to her, and yet he persisted. It seemed as though there was something that he must get at. But I'm not leaf to go with him. Oh, Bran, I'm not leaf to go with him. Strike me dead if I am. She would draw back a little and look at Bran, and he would know that she was speaking the truth. She paled at the very thought of Aegar. He tied up a puppy as he found wandering, she breathed one day close into Bran's.